The pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee will come to order. Kiva, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Here.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Here.
Ranking Member Williams?
Here.
Alvarez, Representatives
Here.
Alvarez?
Cook.
Bracy Davis?
Here.
Kennedy?
Here.
Daly?
Here.
Daniels?
Here.
Dunkley?
Here.
Garcia? Gonzalez Pittman?
Here.
Lopez?
Here.
Michael? Rizzo? Temple?
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the pre-K through 12 Appropriations Subcommittee meeting. I am so sorry, members, for switching it up on you. We're usually downstairs, so that's why it's been a little chaotic. But if members of the audience can please make sure that their cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Well, good afternoon, members, and welcome. Today's meeting officially starts our budgetary process, and I'm looking forward to that and sharing the information with each of you. To start, we have a few policy bills that we will take up, and to accommodate members presenting in other committees, we will start today with HB 699. Student Online Personal Information Protection by Representative Koster. And Representative Koster, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair, Vice Chair Tuck, Ranking Member Williams, committee members. Online learning platforms have been used for many years, but as we all know, the pandemic really accelerated the use of these platforms. Third-party educational applications are being used in the classroom and at home in increasing numbers. These applications, or apps as we like to call them, are able to collect and maintain large amounts of our children's data without clear restrictions on the use of that data. The platforms track students without their knowledge, share their data with big tech companies who then monetize the students' information by selling ads or targeting these children. The Miami Herald reported as many as 90% of these apps did so. HB 699 provides new and extensive data privacy protections for K through 12 students in Florida, provides unprecedented advertising restrictions. The bills focus squarely on operators of these educational sites. It applies to operators whose applications are used primarily for K through 12 purposes and are designed and marketed as such. The bill prohibits operators from engaging in targeted advertising, using the information to amass a profile about a K through 12 student except in furtherance of a K through 12 purpose, selling or sharing a student's covered information or disclosing covered information except in specific limited circumstances. HB 699 requires operators to implement and maintain reasonable security procedures and practices that protect information and delete a student's covered information when requested. That is the bill, Madam Chair.
Seeing no amendments, are there questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, is there anyone wishing to testify? We have Logan Padgett, the James Madison Institute. And that is it. One more. I'm sorry about that. Nancy Lothar with Florida PTA. Wave in support. All right, members, we are in debate. Is there any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Koster, you're recognized to close.
I'll wave close, Chair.
Representative Koster, having closed on the bill, Kiva, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes.
Bracy Davis?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo? Temple? Yes. 14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, show House Bill 699 will be reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee.
All right, next up, we will have HB 287, Required Instruction in the History of Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders by Representative Placencia. You're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Tuck, and Ranking Member Williams. Florida currently has required instruction for public education for many groups such as African Americans, Jewish Americans, and Hispanic Americans. This bill would simply add Asian Americans to the already existing instruction list, and that is the bill.
Seeing no amendments, are there questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, is there anyone wishing to testify? Bit of a stack here. Mimi Shan with Make Us Visible Florida Director, proponent of the bill. You're recognized.
Thank you. Chair Tomko, Vice Chair Tuck, and distinguished members of the Pre-K-12 Appropriations Committee. My name is Mimi Chan, and I am the state director for Make Us Visible Florida. I've been working on this bill for 2 years, and I am so grateful to Representative Plasencia for collaborating with us to include Asian American and Pacific Islander history in our K-12 curriculum. Thank you all for your time, and a special thank you to the committee members who are already co-sponsors of this bill. Your support has been essential, and I'm so proud today to speak in favor of HB 287. I've been a resident of Orlando, Florida for 43 years. I attended elementary, middle, and high school in Florida, and also graduated from the University of Central Florida. Although I was born in the United States, I was seen as a foreigner growing up and also made to feel like one. I did not learn about the civic contributions of Asian Americans, like the 442nd Infantry Regiment, which was an all-Japanese American unit from World War II and is the most decorated unit for its size and length of service in American military history. Nor did I learn about the LA Chinese American Massacre of 1871, described as the largest mass lynching in American history. I deeply believe that by educating our youth in the history of Asian Americans, our differences can be celebrated instead of feared, and young Asian Americans can take pride in their history, and all children can learn from the triumphs and mistakes of the past. Asian American history is American history. Please favorably vote HB 287 out of the Pre-K-12 Appropriations Committee with haste. Thank you all so much for your consideration and your time.
Thank you so much. Next, we have Audra Macabasco, and I'm so sorry if I pronounced that wrong, a proponent of the bill, waving in support. Next, we have Sarah Lee Kane, a proponent, waving in support. Nancy Lothar with Florida PTA, waving in support. And we have Jose Fuentes with Miami-Dade Asian American Advisory Board, waving in support. Thank you all. All right, members, is there any debate? Seeing no debate, Representative Plasencia, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to thank Make Us Visible Florida for bringing this great bill here, and specifically Mimi Chan for introducing me to the bill. And this is a fantastic bill. I ask for your support, and with that, I close.
Representative Plasencia, having closed on the bill, Kiva, please call roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo? Temple?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, Show House Bill 287 will be reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we'll have CS for House Bill 551, requires African-American instruction by Education Quality Subcommittee, and Representative Benjamin. Representative Benjamin, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, Committee Members. I, along with my co-chair, Randy Fine, rise to present you HB 551. It expands on the work that I began with the expansion of African American studies in the state of Florida. And it answers the question as to what can we teach with regards to African American history? How will we make sure that African American history is taught? And what would be the consequences should it not be taught? And that is the bill.
Thank you. Representative Benjamin, having explained and seeing no amendments, are there questions on the bill? Seeing no questions, we do have some members wishing to testify. Nancy Lothar with the Florida PTA, proponent of the bill, waving in support. Cecil Schoon, League of Women Voters, wishing to appear in person, waving in support. Tori Alston, School Board of Broward County, waving in support. Okay, you got to bear with me on this. Daniel Fungoli with the School Board of Broward County, waving in support. Members, that is it for public testimony. Is there any debate on the bill? Seeing no debate, Representative Benjamin, you're I'm so sorry. Representative Bracey Davis, you are recognized.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I'd just like to say thank you to Representative Benjamin for this fantastic bill. We know that African-American history is indeed a part of American history. We thank you for leading the charge with this effort.
Any further debate? Ranking Member Williams, you are recognized.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And Rep. Benjamin, I want to say thank you for standing up for what you believe in and making sure that everybody recognizes that African-American heritage is important in history. Thank you.
Any further debate? Seeing none, Representative Benjamin, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Listen, there's been a lot of controversy about what Florida does with regards to African-American history. And we may disagree as to theories, but there can be no disagreement that in the state of Florida, we will ensure that every child learns African-American history. Thank you.
Representative Benjamin, having closed on the bill, Kiva, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Hannity?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez? Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, show CS for House Bill 551 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
All right, with all of our general bills completed, let's turn to the next agenda item, which is my budget, or should I say our budget proposal for fiscal year 23-24. I will wait one moment for everyone to get a spreadsheet. All right. The funding issues on this spreadsheet represent the changes being proposed to the pre-K through 12 base budget. If there are no changes being proposed to something funded in the base budget, then there will be no issue on the spreadsheet. My proposed fiscal year 23 through 24 pre-K through 12 budget totals $19.2 billion. This includes $13.9 billion in general revenue funds and $5.3 billion in trust funds. This is an increase of $842.2 million over the current year budget. We have six budget entities within our subcommittee, and I will encourage you to review my recommended budget for all six. There are three I want to specifically provide some remarks and highlights on. I'll start with Early Learning Services budget entity, which is on page one. Ranking Member Williams, while I know you're interested in the entire pre-K through 12 budget, you continue to be such a strong advocate for our state's youngest learners, so I really hope this section makes you smile. For this budget entity, I am proposing an amount of $1.5 billion, which includes $581.7 million in general revenue funds. Some important highlights of my recommended budget include: on page one, row three, a $100 million increase in the school readiness allocation. This should help increase the number of school readiness slots in our state, but also help to implement the provisions of the law that provide for a standard calculation methodology for provider reimbursement rates. Also on row four, there is a little over $20 million to fund an increase in the VPK-based student allocation. The regular school year BSA will increase by $138, and the summer school BSA will increase by $118. On rows 7, 8, and 16, I am recommending we restore the non-recurring funds for the three new school readiness allocations that were created in last year's SB 2524. I want to skip over the FEFP for now and jump down to page 2 and the non-FEFP, which starts on row 30. The total for this budget entity is $424.7 million. And while the majority of issues funded in this area are appropriations projects, you will also see on row 34, I am recommending an increase of $5,000 and the award amounted provided to the four Teacher of the Year finalists, and a $30,000 increase in the award amount for the Teacher of the Year. On row 30, I am recommending an increase of about $1.7 million in the operational costs for the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind. And on page 3, row 38, I am recommending $10 million for the new Recruitment of Heroes bonus program, which is created in our conforming bill. For each of the appropriations categories where projects are funded, you will see that row highlighted in dark pink. For example, row 41 on page 3 is the mentoring appropriation category, and the projects funded in this category are directly below. All appropriations projects funding start on row 41 through row 141. Before I move on to the FEFP, I do want to provide one final remark on the budget spreadsheet. If you turn to page 7, you will see on row 168 an amount totaling in $109.7 million for an FEFP reserve. This amount will not actually be funded in our budget, and therefore it is not included in our allocation. It will be funded in the back of the bill, and here's why. There has been much talk about, well, what if we're wrong? And there are more scholarship students coming into the FEFP than what's been included in the fiscal impact of HB1. Well, let's talk about that fiscal impact. Demographic data, actual private school enrollment data, historical FTC and FES enrollment data, and FTC pledge and remittance data and forecasting data were all used to develop this fiscal impact. Having said this, and listening to the members and their concerns, as I have all told you in our individual meetings, I am recommending that $109.7 million, which represents an additional 14,551 FES students, be appropriated and placed in reserve. If either the October or February FTE survey show there are more scholarship students than what has been included in the fiscal impact of HB1, these funds, can be used to negate proration of the FEFP. All right, now let's move on to the FEFP. Give you some time to switch on over. Members, after page 7 of the budget spreadsheet is a packet of FEFP materials. We spent a great deal of time in this committee and in various individual meetings talking about the FEFP and the challenges of having a 50-year-old funding model that does not align with the state's funding, or excuse me, the state's educational choice policy. As you recall, the overall goal we wanted to attain was to update the FEFP, align it with our state's educational choice policy, and eliminate any negative fiscal impact to both school districts and scholarship students. So I am pleased to say, mission accomplished. We can all pat ourselves on the back. On the first page of your FEFP packet is the statewide summary of my proposed fiscal year 23 through 24 FEFP. And some highlights include a total FEFP of $26.6 billion, which is a $2.1 billion increase over the current year FEFP. Additionally, the BSA is increased by $760.76, bringing the amount of the BSA to $5,348.16. There's a substantial increase in the base FEFP funding of $3.1 billion. And two factors contribute to this increase. Approximately $1.8 billion is transferred from the 9 categoricals that have been highlighted on the statewide summary to the base FEFP, and an additional $807 million in new funds is added to help school districts offset the additional operating costs associated with items such as payroll and retirement changes. And while you cannot see it in just the statewide summary, included in this new funding is $250.7 million for districts to provide salary increases to either classroom teachers or any other instructional personnel. The proviso will state that school districts get to decide how their share of that $250.7 million will be used. This significant increase in the base FEFP means school districts have greater control and flexibility over a large portion of the total FEFP. This is something that the school districts have consistently advocated for, so we have listened to you, we have heard you, and that is why we are doing this. The FEFP categorical, we've talked about so much about the challenge categoricals present in funding school choice and the FEFP. And this recommended budget of the total 17 categorical currently funded in the FEFP, the funding associated with 9 is transferred to the base FEFP. And for 5 of these categoricals to include instructional material, mental health assistance, reading instruction, safe schools, and teacher salary increase. The underlying policies are retained. Of the remaining categoricals, you can see from the statewide summary who is eligible for each one, whether that is a public school student or scholarship student or both. This change addresses the issue that school districts have raised about why certain categoricals like student transportation and federally connected are included in the calculation of the scholarship. A new state-funded discretionary supplement is created for the scholarship students so that school districts will be able to retain the full amount of the discretionary local effort funds. Members, if you'd like to see a summary for each of your individual districts, please just get with us after the meeting. I know we have talked about each and every one of your interests in seeing that, and so we would be very happy to provide you with that. So behind the statewide summary are 3 additional documents. First is a statewide summary comparing each school district's current year FEFP to my proposed FEFP. And you can see that we've accomplished our mission because every school district, even those districts showing a decrease in FTE for fiscal year 23 through 24, have an increase in their total FEFP in their funds per student. The next document shows that the amount of every FES scholarship, both the educational options and the unique abilities one, increases for fiscal year 23 through 24. Second part of our mission accomplished, every scholarship student will benefit from the increase in funding in 23 through 24. And finally, the last document represents a new tab that will be in our FEFP. This shows the total number of scholarship FTE by school district and the FEFP amount associated with these students. School districts will no longer be uncertain about the portion of their FEFP that will be following the scholarship student. Members, this is my proposed fiscal year 23 through 24 pre-K through 12 educational budget. I appreciate all the support from the speaker, Chair Leek, and their continued support to all children and for allowing me to present this proposed budget. I know I've presented a lot of information today, so please, as you take time to review, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me, Denise, Ryan, Kiva, and we are all happy to help you out. I am going to move forward and we can discuss questions or any concerns, but if that's okay, we're going to keep rocking and rolling. So our last agenda item in consideration of our subcommittee's conforming bill, and for this, I will turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Tuck.
Thank you, Chair Tomko. You recognize to explain your bill?
All right, members, this PCB represents the changes that are needed to current statutes in order to implement that FEFP that I've just presented. It's long because of the number of cross-reference changes and conforming provision changes, but really the bill is quite simple. The bill conforms the calculation methodologies for funding the FEFP based on the changes made to the FEFP in the proposed budget. And in particular support of my South Florida colleagues, repeals the enrollment cap on the Group 2 education programs. Renames the district cost differential, or DCD, to the comparable wage factor, or CWF, and modifies its application by authorizing the use of the CWF in the calculation of the FEFP only when a school district's CWF is greater than 1. Repeals 3 categoricals to include funding compression and hold harmless, sparsity supplement, and turnaround supplemental services allocation. It repeals categoricals but retains the underlying funding policies to include the instructional materials, mental health assistance allocation, reading instruction allocation, and safe schools allocation. It repeals the teacher's salary increase allocation but retains the requirement of the 47.5 as the minimum base salary for classroom teachers. It deletes the inclusion of the teacher's classroom supply assistance categorical and the FEFP and modifies the underlying policy. It renames the supplemental academic instruction categorical, the supplemental academic and support services categorical, and modifies its eligible use to include the uses previously included in the turnaround supplemental services allocation. And finally, it creates a new categorical for scholarship students called the state-funded discretionary supplement in lieu of school districts required to share their discretionary local effort funds. And Chair Tuck, that is the bill.
Chair Tomko, having explained the bill, there are no amendments. Are there questions? Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. And Madam Chair, bill sponsor, I appreciate the time that you have taken to actually go over a couple concerns that my colleagues and I had about the bill itself beforehand. This is a lot. And I'm going to take it back and, you know, kind of dissect it a little bit to try to understand it a lot more. But as you mentioned, the $250 million that you have set aside, is that money set aside for the public school system if the calculations is not correct to protect the public school system?
So the $250.7 million that I think you're referring to is the school districts to provide salary increases to either classroom teachers or any other instructional personnel. I think the number you are maybe trying to reference might be the $109 million that we have set aside, and that is the issue that we discussed over the proration that has been brought to our attention with Chair Tuck's House Bill 1. So that is the pot of money that is going to be set aside in case more students come into the scholarship program that we could not have predicted.
Thank you. Additional questions, members? Seeing no further questions, we are now in public testimony. First up will be Marie Tara Rojas with Miami-Dade County School Board. Thank you for being here. You're recognized.
And good afternoon, Madam Chair, Madam Vice Chair, and members of the committee. I am Marie Tara Rojas, and I am the chair of Miami-Dade County Public Schools, the fourth largest in our nation. We are very, very proud to also say that we have retained an A status throughout 3 years, regardless of any challenges which have come our way. For years, the school board of Miami-Dade County has taken the position that Florida education finance program funding formulas need to be overhauled to provide funding in a manner that is fair and recognizes the unique needs of our very diverse school district. The House's budget proposal is a significant step forward in that particular process, and we want to thank leadership for being willing to take such bold action. We have also been clear that increases to education funding, especially in the base student allocation, must keep in pace with inflation. We appreciate the committee's efforts towards this goal. Another board priority for our school district has been the elimination of the total funds compression. On behalf of our board, and today I have to say that our vice chair, Danny Espino, is here with us as well. I again want to thank all of you for truly listening and taking the actions that you have taken thus far. We want to thank the committee members for any steps that your budget proposal may take to protect the district and charter schools during this growth. And this is a FACE, a Family Empowerment Scholarship Program that is just beginning. Miami-Dade has been and continues to be a national leader in the parental choice movement, and we understand the importance of rolling out a program in a manner that maximizes choice options for parents and supports our students. Finally, the FEFP has not been equitable to students and taxpayers for Miami-Dade in the past. This bold budget proposal offered today has initiated the conversation to recalibrate the process. We understand this is ongoing work, and we are eternally grateful for your assistance and constant diligence. I want to particularly take a moment to thank Chair Tomcow and also Representative Danny Perez and the committee members, each and every one of you, for your willingness to revisit how education is funded in Florida. We are grateful for the approach that you have taken and for sharing your very precious time with all of us. We commend you once more for having our Florida students at the forefront of all of your actions. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Next up, Jose Dotris, Superintendent, Miami-Dade County Public Schools.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Committee. It's really an honor for me to be here today. I am Jose Dotris, Superintendent of Miami-Dade County Public Schools. I'm here today to thank the committee for a number of elements in this bold education budget.
I'm so sorry.
You were projecting so well.
I don't have to do it again, do I?
No, you're good.
So thank you again for recognizing the incredible impact of the influx of over 18,000 foreign-born students to our district and truly removing the caps for ESOL students and also special education allocations. A very significant step, and we are so thankful. We are still facing an issue as a result of the 22-23 caps, and we hope that this concern may be addressed. This budget proposal is a bold and very needed change in how schools and students are funded, but more importantly, how they are supported. We look forward to working with legislators as this evolves throughout the process. And again, in amplifying what our school board chair said, thank you for your vision and your commitment to the students of this great state of Florida. Thank you very much.
Thank you for being here. Next up is Danny Espino with Miami-Dade County Public Schools.
Good afternoon, Chair. Good afternoon, committee members. Danny Espino, Vice Chair, Miami-Dade County Public Schools. Let me start by thanking certainly the sponsor, but certainly all of you for taking up this bill and taking bold steps towards improving the future of our children in terms of education. For Miami-Dade County, the changes proposed will bring much needed relief as we become one of the centers of challenges in the state dealing with a number of issues. As our board chair has said publicly, we are experiencing a perfect storm as we see a convergence of a high number of vacancies in teacher and staff positions, out-of-control prices in this inflationary period that we are in, skyrocketing housing costs, and the consequences of immigration policies. Miami's not new to waves of immigration. My own family immigrated to this country in the 60s, but we are currently experiencing what border towns must experience. To date, as the superintendent indicated, we are over 18,000 foreign-born students into our schools just this year alone. That number is hard to comprehend, but I think if I can bring it down to a micro level, and one of my schools in my district, Sweetwater Elementary, 384 students total. Of that, 161 at last count are foreign born. That's over 40% of the school that speaks primarily or exclusively Spanish, and many of them do not have a base of education from their countries of origin. We have an obligation not only to educate and assimilate these children, we also have an obligation to ensure that our existing students are not held back as a consequence of what we're doing for the new students, all while stretching our teachers and resources extremely thin. Make no mistake, we are on the front lines of dealing with immigration crisis, and we welcome and we need your help. Eliminating the cap on ESOL and ESC allocations ensures that district receives funding to serve the needs of fragile students while also ensuring our existing students are not impeded. We thank you for recommending the elimination of the total funds compression, a request of our district since its inception back in 2018, as well as for recommending flexibility in the use of funds to permit us to prioritize our needs, which are changing regularly. Lastly, thank you for modifying the district cost differential. While there's still work to be done to address disparities that impact high-cost counties like Miami-Dade County, this is a great first step, and I support this bill. Thank you for your leadership.
Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Wendy Dodge with Polk County Public Schools. Thank you. Fred Hyde, Polk County Public Schools.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Tuck, Ranking Member Williams. My name is Fred Hyde, Superintendent for Polk County Public Schools, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today regarding the proposed committee bill impacting funding in the FEFP. Polk County, as you know, is currently the seventh largest school district in the state of Florida. We've experienced unprecedented growth over the last few years. We exceeded 14% growth. This year alone, we grew by 7,200 students. So we also are ranked 27th nationally in overall size. Polk County appreciates and is happy to support the flexibility provided by this committee bill by transferring funding from several of the categoricals directly into the base FEFP and the resulting increase in the base student allocation, while still protecting compression elements that assist interior counties like ours who do not benefit from the higher property values of Florida's beautiful coastal counties. We also support and appreciate the repeal of the Group 2 funding cap for important programs such as our ESOL, career education, and exceptional education students who require and need the most medical and academic service supports possible. By allowing full-weighted funding for these students over the current policy of funding any student over the cap with only the BSA, you recognize the importance of providing each student with the opportunity and extra interventions necessary to ensure their overall academic and growth success. Polk County Public Schools also feel strongly that funding all of Florida students in the FEFP, including the choice students, is an important element to maintain the equity of our finance program, which has been studied and has been upheld throughout the country over the years as one of the most equitable in the nation. We support your policy that allows funding for all students to rise and fall together instead of pitting fortunes of students against each other each year. Our only suggestion would be to further solidify that equity by making reserve funding available for any student in the state, regardless of their choice of education provider. And the reason why, while we are good at projecting student counts, it's not an exact science. And for the current year, we're about 10,000 student FTEs over the number of students the state had funded for the year in the third calculation, which occurs prior to the February count. So unless the February count shows a 10,000 student decrease statewide, we know that school districts will be prorated for the next year due to this overage. While the scholarship funding will remain the same because they're not recalculated, by allowing any student over the statewide count to be funded through the development of the reserve allocation, this relieves that pressure and also allows the recalculation of scholarships throughout the year and maintains the equity of the overall FEFP. And finally, I'd like to commend the committee on the proposed bill's policy regarding the comparable wage factor, formerly known as the DCD. Raising the floor to a 1.0 for all districts, when combined with an increased BSA, makes sure that every district should benefit from your policy and flexibility, and has been something our district has been advocating for a very long time. But you've actually done us one better and gone further by funding and finding a way to also protect the increased cost of living expenses experienced by some of our fellow school districts by making sure they retain their current weighted funding. So again, we thank you for the thoughtfulness of this process and the work that you've committed. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak before the committee today, Madam Chair. I'd be happy to answer your questions. And I also want to thank staff because I know what happens behind the scenes to make the magic happen. Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next up is my very own superintendent, Dr. Alice Barfield with Glades County Public Schools.
Good afternoon. As I was walking up here today, I remembered back to 1987 as I was greeted with a bunch of blue coats, and I was a representative for the Florida House, and it began my love for politics. And then 2 years later, I came back in the Florida Senate and was a page. And now here I am as standing before you as a superintendent of schools and because of my love for children. And so it all ties together. And so it's kind of like an aha moment. You've heard from one of the largest districts in the state, but now I'm one of the smallest districts. And we like to say that we may be the smallest district with the largest heart. We support updating the FEFP, not just because it's important to align our state's funding model with our educational choice policy, but also because there are things within the FEFP that needed updating regardless of school choice. Glades County School District is especially grateful for the change made to the district cost differential. We are one of the districts that currently has comparable wage factor of below 1.0. As a result, when this factor is used in the calculation of our base FEFP funding, we actually see a reduction in our FTE, which reduces our base FEFP funding. We are extremely appreciative of only making the adjustment if a district's factor is greater than 1.0. Our school districts must find ways to pay for the additional costs associated with these. And I think the one word that I keep hearing from many districts and my colleagues is flexibility, and we are appreciative of the fact that you are allowing for that. Additionally, we are appreciative of the changes in the categoricals and retaining those categoricals that should apply to a public school student only, like the student transportation categorical. Increasing the amount of the base FEFP is amazing, and the greater the flexibility that school districts have over deciding how much of their FEFP needs to support the implementation and compliance of various policies is extremely important. We look forward to working on behalf of our children and the Florida House and its efforts to positively affect the lives of our school-aged children, and to remember that it's all about the students. Sometimes it's hard to forget, you know, it's not about us. It's about what's best for the students. Thank you very much for your leadership.
Thank you for being here. Next up, Gregory James.
Well, good afternoon, and chair, co-chair, and to all of the members of the committee. Let me say, first of all, as a pastor and a community engager, paying close attention to the budget meant a lot to me because children mean a lot to me. And to be able to see and to be able to hear what took place today, I can report back to a number of pastors that I'm in collaboration with that this budget has four important words that means a lot to all of us. One, increase. Because as faith leaders, we are constantly working with a lot of our schools, whether they're public schools, whether they're private schools, whether they're charter schools, generating revenue to help teachers who love doing what they're doing to have the necessary funds to make sure when they enter that classroom, children that they serve have what they need. So to hear increase, if I was in church, I'd have been shouting. Okay. But to hear increase was amazing. But then the next thing that I heard, another word that I heard was flexibility. Being able to give those who are in leadership, superintendents, the flexibility to know where funds need to go to help serve the population that they serve is so important. And then to increase funding for mental health. It means a lot because there's so many in my community that need that service and need funding to empower them. So I want to say to the chair, the co-chair, and to all of the committee members, job. And most times, faith and government don't marry. But today, we're creating a great courtship, okay? Thank you for the service.
Thank you for being here. Next up, David Struess, Foundation for Florida's Future.
Tough act to follow. Good afternoon. I'm David Struess. I work for the Foundation for Florida's Future, Vice Chair Tuck. Chair Tom Cow, thank you for giving me a moment to talk about this bill. The Foundation's excited the House is exploring ways to further improve Florida's funding model. And especially as the legislature takes monumental steps to improve choice, we think that looking at the funding model makes a lot of sense. We believe that collapsing the categoricals and increasing the base student allocation will allow districts additional flexibility, additional control to meet the individual unique needs of their students. And additionally, I think importantly, it aligns with our state's choice program. So having a funding model that aligns with their choice program is critical to the success of our students. As you continue to move forward on this piece of legislation, I'd ask you to consider two things. One is a low income weight. Florida is one of only seven states, or there are 43 states in the nation that have a low income weight. Florida is one of them that does not. A low-income weight essentially looks at students and says students from our low-income communities often have additional needs, and so therefore we'll give them some additional funding to meet those needs. Additionally, we'd ask you to look at our elementary schools and literacy coaches. As we come out of the pandemic and we recognize the trouble that the pandemic had on our students' learning and reading, we'd want to have every single elementary school in the state have a literacy coach to be able to work with the teachers and the students in that school to ensure that our students are making progress in reading. And we look forward to continuing to review all the spreadsheets and runs that came out today, and we'll continue to look forward to working with you as you move forward. So thank you.
Thank you for being here. Next up, Larry Smith, Diamonds in the Rough.
Good afternoon. I'm Leroy Smith, CEO of Diamonds in the Rough, 15-year educator, where, you know, we've helped students elevate their learning gains and to create a career path for them. So I just want to thank you guys for the budget changes, for the impact, because me being teaching on both sides, I see the needs. Kids learn different. We call it differentiated instruction. So the allocation of the funds is geared. It needs to be geared to the kids' needs. This is all about the kids. It's all about kids. And then with the COVID, a lot of these kids facing depression and anxiety, where it causing them to, it's affecting their learning habit, because they've been out of school. So they have to catch up. And coming from the homes that they're coming from, we have to allocate these funds to help these kids from where they are, to get them to where they need to be. So I applaud this change in this budget, because it's helping the kids and ultimately will help the community, because the kids are our future. The kids will take your spot, and everyone's spot in here. So I really appreciate you guys for making the change.
Thank you for being here. Next up, we have Marie Claire Lehman with Fund Education Now.
Hi. thank you. Thank you, Chair Tomko. Thank you, Rep. Tuck for allowing me to speak. I feel a bit sheepish because of all these experts who spoke before me, but Fund Education Now does want to just say a couple of things, and your presentation was very helpful today. We want to make sure that as representatives on this committee and also in the other committees that will be looking at this, so all of you, really take a look closely at how this affects your district. I'm glad that that data is available to all the representatives so that you can really look at how the changes in the FEFP will affect your district. The FEFP, as Superintendent previously said, is a gold standard nationwide for equitable funding. And one of the things that makes it so is transparency. And so we want to make sure, or you should all make sure, that there continues to be transparency about how the funding is spent, and especially in those cases where the categoricals have been collapsed, but the mandates remain for the public schools, it's important that that funding be available to the public schools. For instance, when we collapse or when we repeal a categorical like instructional material, but that money is now in the BSA, which is split with also voucher students who don't necessarily even, the ESAs don't necessarily even go to tuition anymore. And so we have to be careful to make sure that we're not spreading those resources too thin where they're not needed. This is a time of great uncertainty, not knowing how many more students the state will be funding. So it's really important that we proceed with caution in order to not lose that equity that we are able currently to have in the FEFP. And I think that one thing that we have to pay really close attention to is the funding that is going to the FES through the FEFP, so that we really understand how the public schools and the different, you know, the different school systems are being funded through the FEFP. And lastly, one thing that was trying to keep up with these bills and everything from the outside a little bit, one thing that is a little bit surprising is that there's not a lot of it doesn't equate the fiscal analysis on HB1, for instance, when we're talking about new funding being up to $2.1 billion here to account for a lot of the new FTEs that we're expecting through the FEFP, when actually the fiscal was much lower on HB1. And so from the outside, that's a little bit confusing and maybe needs further explanation. Thank you very much.
Next up, Bradford Hall.
Good afternoon, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to address the committee. Chair Tomko, Vice Chair Tuck, Representative Williams is ranking member, and also to my favorite representative, because she's also my state representative, Representative Daniels, and Representative Michael, who's also a part of the Duval delegation. Thank you. I am here today in the spirit of working together. I am not a K-12 educator, but I am a higher education administrator in Jacksonville. Frederick Douglass said that it is easier to build strong children than to repair broken men. And so I have over 19 billion reasons to thank this committee today for the work that you do to prepare our students for college. And not only for preparing them for college, but giving them the opportunity to be prepared for workforce, career trades, a number of things that you've done in this budget, that you're proposing in this budget, that are going to go a long way for students and families throughout the state of Florida. Every child has a dream. I have children in my family who attend traditional public schools, charter schools. There are students in my family who go to private schools. I love all of them the same. And I appreciate you all for working together, for building a consensus, for doing what is right for the students and families of the great state of Florida. Education is a powerful tool. It's a tool that is so powerful that it has the ability to turn walls into doors. So thank you so much from the bottom of my heart and on behalf of all of the students of the great state of Florida and educators everywhere, even those who partner with K-12 educators as college administrators and college professors, thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you for being here. Last up, we have Otis Young with Kingdom Life Preparatory Academy.
Good afternoon. I'm a preacher by nature. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Listen, I am Otis Young. I serve as the Chief Executive Officer for Kingdom Life Preparatory Academy here in Tallahassee, Florida, one great school in three great locations. The population that I have the unique privilege of serving is a unique population. Out of our 400 students, 395 of them are scholarship students that come from what society says as disadvantaged backgrounds. I myself grew up in Orlando, Florida, and I came from what they said a disadvantaged background. Mom didn't have a high school diploma. Dad didn't have a high school diploma, but I had a village that made sure that I made it to college and completed with two doctorate degrees. At the end of the day, this is what I call, this bill is a major game changer. My students and I, we talk about game changers. This is a game changer for all students, not just students in public school, not just students in charter schools, but students in private school as well. And I am here today to sound the alarm, to advocate for students that may not know how to advocate for themselves properly, to say that this is a great bill. Florida does an awesome job of school choice because one size doesn't fit at all. But there are choices out there that are healthy, that make sure that all students in Florida are educated well. So I commend you for what you're doing, and let's push this thing forward. Let's change the narrative. Let's change the atmosphere. Let's level the playing field through the auspices of change, through the auspices of choice. And I am here today to say let's continue to work together. And thank you for this unique opportunity. Listen, I'm going to close with a poem that I was taught by my fourth grade educator at Washington Shores Elementary. She said, just because you're on free and reduced lunch doesn't mean that you have to stay on free and reduced lunch. I always had a dream of having my own business, and this is, I believe, and I tell my students every day, she taught me this poem. I'm going to close with it and paraphrase. It says, hold fast to dreams, for if dreams die, life is a broken winged bird that cannot fly. Hold fast to dreams, for if dreams go, life is a barren field frozen with snow. Listen, that's by Langston Hughes. By passing this bill, we are making dreams come true for families that need an opportunity for choice. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for being here, and amen. Seeing no further public testimony, members, we are in debate. Is there a debate on the bill? Representative Bracey Davis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tuck. And thank you, Madam Chair. It's interesting. I had a whole lot that I wanted to say today, and then the public testimony was so overwhelming. I'm the daughter, wife, and granddaughter of a preacher, so I'm not going to preach because I think you all did that very, very well. But I did want to almost turn to my neighbor and say flexibility, so almost. So I'd like to take this moment to first say thank you to Madam Chair. Number one, for I think good leaders are leaders who listen. And I had somewhat passionate debate in this very committee about HB1 and my concerns with HB1. And we're dealing with leaders. While I don't always agree, we have leaders that are listening, listening to you, listening to your public testimony, your comment. And what I'm talking about specifically is there was a lot of discussion as it relates to the budget and reserve, if there were too many students that were going to move over on the voucher side that we weren't prepared for. And I think the leadership hurt you, and so there was some reserve put in the budget, and I'm grateful for that because that tells me that no matter what side you are on, leaders are listening to what you say and your concern. Because I was concerned in terms of with the shift in HB1, how it would affect our public school system, and I think this $109 million is a good step in the right direction. So I'm grateful for that. And there's some words that I heard many of you say today that are resonating on me in terms of like flexibility and willingness to revisit funding. So I'm grateful. I think there's still discussions to be had. Chair and Vice Chair, I'm going to take this budget home and highlight, and if I have any questions, I will follow up. But the great thing is I know that you will be willing to listen to any questions that I have because you already have. I thank you for the one-on-one. I thank you for going through the conforming bill and the budget, the conforming bill with us individually. And the good thing about everybody in this room and everybody on this committee is while we don't always agree, we do have one common interest, and that is our children and the future leaders of this state. So with that, I say thank you.
Representative Dunkley, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to kind of echo what has been said earlier, but Chair Tomko, thank you so much for your willingness to explain, you know, call us all in and explain what was going on in this FEFP. And I know my constituents, when I spoke to my schools, you know, I support the school choice. And when I spoke to my public schools, one of the things they did mention was the flexibility. So thank you so much for listening to the colleagues and the testimonies and, you know, as a collaborative team working together to make sure we got to a place where no one feels cheated. And I think that's what happened today. No one feels cheated because we have increased flexibility and have increased funding. And so thank you for, you know, your leadership in this area.
Representative Rizzo, you're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I mean, thanks to everyone really just doesn't even start to come close. Chair Tomko, you have just been amazing throughout this whole process. Our entire educational staff, Ms. Potban, the guru of the FEFP, amazing. We've talked about this for years. You know, Chair, under your leadership, we're seeing this happen. This is truly transformational. The amount of increase, the flexibility, you know, districts have talked to us about so many things that are mentioned in this bill or that we've talked about here. The compression has been an issue. Obviously, you know, there's just so much in this. It's hard to kind of grasp just what exactly is happening if you're not in this world. And we've heard from so many experts that are all up, you know, our colleagues on the dais here have said that, you know, that we constantly come here with one thing in mind, and that is the betterment of our districts, of what we do. One of the speakers talked about equity, and FEFP is based on equity. FEFP is based on making sure whether you're from Hamilton County, Miami-Dade County, Monroe County, that everyone that is involved in this process remains dedicated to knowing and ensuring that our K-12 system is funded and funded at the best rate possible. It may not be absolutely perfect, but that is why we constantly are working toward that end, is to have a better outcome for everyone. This is something that every single member in this body can be proud of. And I just, again, I can't thank everyone enough for what we're doing here today. Thank you.
Representative Daniels, you're recognized.
Thank you very much. thank you, Chair Tom Cole, Chair Tuck, Ranking Member Williams, and all of the committee members. I just want to thank you for this bold step in funding education for all of our students in Florida. And I echo all of the celebratory comments concerning this budget. The common denominator we have in solving educational concerns in Florida is right here, right now, our children. This is my fifth session in the House, and I'm proud to be a part of this great team. I am on four educational committees, and I have experienced the long hours, the hard conversations, and the challenges that got us where we are today from a frontline perspective. And I believe that we are on the right road to funding K through 12 education in the state of Florida, and I'm glad to be a part of this great bill and process.
Representative Gonzalez Pittman, you're recognized.
I would just like to thank the chair for having the vision and the foresight to see that the changes were needed and put in all the work. I also would like to thank Denise and Ryan Bailey for taking the time and meeting with me and sitting and explaining all the details. So they know this bill, they know the budget, and I'm just really proud to be able to vote on this.
Ranking Member Williams, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Long hours put in, and when you are serving on a committee that you feel so strongly about, and knowing every vote that you cast impacts the people that you serve, you make sure that you're listening on every word that's said and every page that's put out for the bills that's put through. You make sure you want to make sure that you are doing the best that you can. But when we can actually hear and see a shift in what's going on the committee, and I can hear my colleague in the back say, amen, we know that we're doing what's right. So I want to say thank you for those that's coming and giving the word to us, because when you are struggling with things and you depend on certain words to hear, and when a swift wave come through and the board changes and you see different things come about, you know you're in the right posture. So I will be up on this bill, and I want to continue to hear people in the audience come up and let us know your feelings and how things impact you that we are not taking a look at. Thank you.
Representative Alvarez, you're recognized.
Oh, now I got to follow that up? Thank you. Amen. 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 Madam Chair, amen. You know, I feel like, with this love fest going on, I don't need to echo, I don't need to talk if we don't have to, but I just really want to say a few things. When I go to, when people come talk to me about what they're doing, I always say, please speak to me like a third grader so I can really unpackage it and understand, especially something as complex as this. If someone throws one more acronym at me, I think my head will explode. And Madam Chair, you do it with such precision that it's unbelievable. But this is a compliment to you and your staff. And Ms. Denise, I really would love to address you as well and give you my highest regards, because what, as a third grader, what we have done is for 50 years or decades, we've had the same way of doing things over and over again. This is the state of Florida. We are not a one-size-fit-all. So what we did was we started fixing it on the outside, but we didn't fix it on the inside. And it took leadership and courage, because if you think this was an easy lift, you know, you've heard this is not an easy lift. There's a lot of stakeholders involved, and we heard from them, and I can't explain to you how much that meant to me as a representative that has never taught in the public schools, that's never worked on a school board, that's never dived into it before. And it's a really big deal. So what we're doing is transformational going into the future, but really what we're doing is leadership. And it's a great example of it. So my hat's to you and the staff, and I am extremely proud to be here today. So thank you, ma'am.
Representative Michael, you're recognized.
And thank you so much. Thank you. Everything has already been said. And Chair Tom Cole, Chair Tuck, you guys have been superb. You've, as a freshman coming in and watching this process, and you've asked for my input, is valuable to me. And I can tell you, I appreciate everyone that spoke. The Duval representative, of course, got my heart, you know. And I thank you for the pastor that spoke. I didn't make it to church last Sunday, so amen. Amen. And I want to thank the staff that worked on this budget, and Chair Tomko, I tell you, I'm just so impressed and I'm so grateful, because you sat down with me and you went through my district with me, the budget for my district, and you answered the questions that is one of the things so dear to me as a military retired military spouses, our military families, and they are in this. They're often forgotten about. When children come from another state, the parents don't know what schools are good schools, what schools are productive schools to send their kids to. So to be able to echo their voice here, having a military base as part of my district, and then to see it inside of here, I'm so excited to be able to go back to them and tell them, you know what, you guys are never, you're not forgotten. And that our chair and you know, our vice chairs and ranking members and our committees, we came together and we delivered for them in all of Duval County, but particularly it's dear to my heart, the military families. So thank you.
Representative Garcia, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Tomko, I commend you for this budget and the staff. You guys have done a great work. You know, in Miami-Dade County, we have so many new immigrant children that are coming across the border, and everybody had their hair on fire. So thank you so much for this great budget, and we appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Additional Love Fest members? Representative Daly, you're recognized.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Vice Chair. I just figured I'd jump in because I think I'm the only one that hasn't spoken. so thank you for that. And kind of like Representative Alvarez, so this is my first year in the education silo. So I came in and there were all these acronyms and all these things, the FFP and the ABC and the DCD. And I honestly didn't know what any of it meant. And so, Chair, I appreciate the time you've spent with me and Denise and going through everything. And it is really cool to see something, I think, yeah, I don't want to overuse the word revolutionary, but I think it's really cool the way we're doing this and changing this and your leadership in doing so. So thank you very much, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
Representative Temple, you're recognized.
Well, gentlemen, as an educator, I may have a cheat sheet for you that can give you some breakdown of some of the abbreviations, but change is hard, and a lot of work has gone into this, and kudos to everybody involved. Change is scary, and because of solid leadership, it hasn't been as scary. There's still a bit of unknown, but if evidence of today and over the past several weeks, the leadership will be there to support and guide us through that. And so kudos to everybody, and ditto on all the other comments, because it is been in education for 23 years, and from the very beginning, there's been talk of revamping and redoing, and we're here, and it's exciting. Thank you.
Representative Kennedy, no pressure, but.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just sitting next to my friend, Representative Temple, and I think there are others on the committee who've been educators, but both of us have spent a couple of decades in education. And the thing that strikes me about this budget and what I'm so grateful for is the way it represents trust in educators. That is what flexibility does, and it is exciting, and we are grateful for the trust that has been placed in educators and in our school districts, public, private, charter, homeschool. We see that across the board, there are increased opportunities to do things that are good for kids. And when that is our goal and we see that reflected in this budget, it's a great day in the Florida legislature. I'm proud to be a part of it. I know we all are. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Vice Chair. Thank you to all of you who have been such a critical part of this important conversation.
I don't think there are any members left to debate. So I just wanted to put in my two cents and say that I want to commend you all on the fantastic work. You know, so often we talk about picking winners and losers, and it's a very rare sight when the largest school district, one of the smallest school districts, a public and a private school can come testify and all say the same thing, that this is revolutionary for our kids. So I just wanted to thank you, Chair Tomko and Denise. I know this was a labor of love, so congratulations. And with that, you're recognized to close.
Well, how do you follow all of that up? You know, I think a lot has been said today of the good work that we've been doing in this committee. I first want to thank each and every one of you on this committee. I hope you have seen my commitment. When I first was a freshman, I sat on pre-K through 12 appropriations, and I was that committee member that was like, what in the world does FEFP, FTE, DCD? I mean, it's a lot. And so I had an acronym cheat sheet that Denise gave me back then. And so it was really important to me that I made sure each and every one of you felt included on what we did in this committee. because truly it is, and I think everyone in the audience can see that we have collaborated in such a way that we have been able to listen to each of your concerns from your district. I remember the first time I met the members, the new freshman members from the Miami-Dade delegation. I mean, the Group 2 cap was probably the fifth thing that came out of their mouth. And so to be able to work with them on that, to be able to address all these concerns about picking winners and losers, we wouldn't be right here and being able to make this great change if it weren't for our leadership. Our speaker, Speaker Renner, our Speaker Designate Perez, our Chairman Leek, and our staff, Denise, you've been working on this for a number of years, and Ryan, you've been working so closely with her, and Kiva and Miss Cheryl, you guys have been truly wonderful to work for or work with, and you know, you have been the steady guiding leadership that we all need to understand what is a 50-year funding formula that has never once had someone take a crack at it, and that is what we've done. Members, with this PCB and our proposed $2.1 billion increase in the FEFP, everyone wins. I cannot say that enough. Everyone wins. All students and parents win because we fund students regardless of choice, whether that's public school students or students who choose a scholarship option. All teachers win because we ensure funding for teachers' salaries without diverting funds for other uses. And all school districts win because we increase every district's FEFP that funds and provides more spending flexibility. I ask for each of your favorable support, which I think I got verbally, but you know, I'm hoping that translates in the vote. And with that, I just thank you all for your hard work, and I appreciate you all for being here today. And I hope in our next committee stop, we'll have some amens happening as well. And with that, I close.
Chair Tomko, having closed on the bill, Kiva, please call the roll.
Chair Tomko?
Yes.
Vice Chair Tuck?
Yes.
Ranking Member Williams?
Yes.
Representatives Alvarez?
Yes, ma'am.
Gracie Davis?
Yes.
Kennedy?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Daniels?
Yes.
Dunkley?
Yes.
Garcia?
Yes.
Gonzalez-Pittman?
Yes.
Lopez? Michael?
Yes.
Rizzo?
Yes.
Temple?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays, Madam Chair.
Members, by your vote, show PCB PKA 23-01 is reported favorably. Congratulations, and I'll turn the gavel back over.
Thank you. Well, members, this concludes our committee meeting today. Thank you, thank you, thank you all. Please, I encourage you as you review your project list, the FEFP, please come chat with us, ask us questions. Like I said, we'd be very happy to provide you with the specifics when it comes to your school district with those updated numbers. And if there's no further business in front of the committee, Ranking Member Williams moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.